Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts in Podcast 735. So this is something that I've decided I want to take on because I am starting to worry about certain type of rhetoric that I see at this point coming from I hesitate to call it the political right, but basically what it amounts to is warmongers, again, targeting the United States. As commentators, media, talking heads, and politicians say or wonder out loud whether we are going to have another civil war. This is, I think it's the height of folly to even suggest this. I have yelled at people at events who have brought this up because I don't think they really know what they're saying when they say, we're going to have another civil war in this country. And I have a few things I want to say about it. Especially considering the fact that we're, on the anniversary of two significant events in U.S. history, both bloody wars. One, the Revolution, and two, the Civil War and Gettysburg. So we're going to talk about some of this stuff in podcast 735. So summertime is usually go time for the trades. So it's an ongoing joke that plumbers and construction guys don't have a summer because they're too busy working. And this goes for Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for Homer Business as well, because they are working real hard right now, just getting everybody's systems straightened out from a very cold winter. So plumbing, heating, or air conditioning problems requires reliable service. You got to have somebody that knows what they're doing. And that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown. What do? Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Let's talk business, because I have been concentrating on residential, but people in business really do need reliable service, because if you're running retail, if you're running a shop with employees, your stuff, you know, the bathrooms and everything else, or a C or whatever, really has to work. I can't recommend Ryan more for reliable service, especially for business. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing at ryanplumbing.com. So the Bob Davis podcasts are available at a lot of these different syndication services. The granddaddy, of course, is iTunes, where I started in 2009. Also available at Stitcher.com, which works really well with Android devices, or TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Spreaker.com, which is now owned by Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and more. Really appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on social media like Facebook. And I love Instagram, and thanks for your donations for thebobdavispodcast.com at thebobdavispodcast.com. Just look for the big donate button and click on that, and that goes into the digital fuel fund, for the most part, for thebobdavispodcast.com. So first, there's no reason for this to be complicated or difficult or academic or anything else. This should be pretty straightforward, and it shouldn't take a long time. Now, I've tried to do this two or three different times, and the way I get caught up in concepts and sidebars, and it drives me crazy. I hate it. Some people love it. I don't. So to deal with that, I write stuff. Then I don't like the way it sounds when I write it. So then I end up going back and forth between reading what I've written and ad-libbing, and when I start ad-libbing, then I start saying, you know, and everything else. It drives me nuts. But basically, this idea of civil war is easing its way back into our current political lexicon, and that is not good. Now, if you Google civil war, you will find a bunch of complex definitions and explanations for what a civil war is, with all kinds of examples and everything else. But let's try to just boil it down to its essence, which is a civil war is a war between citizens of the same country. Now, the war part is that war is a state of armed conflict. It is not a protest. It is not civil unrest. It is not people expressing outrage through various ways. War is a state of armed conflict. And this is a state in which the most ruthless, usually the biggest and best armed combatant, eliminates the other combatant's means and will to continue to fight. If it's a boxing match, you knock the other guy down and until he can't get up, and then you win. That's basically how it works. If it's football, you demoralize and prevent the other side from scoring, and you score. So in war, this is done with killing. And killing as many of the so-called enemy as possible. Various combatants at various times have poisoned the water. They've blown up towns and cities and mills. They've attacked civilians. They have used chemical weapons and everything else that is required to, quote-unquote, win the war. So war is not a protest. It is a final conflict, and it is decidedly a failure of politics and law and civility. And if you spend any time reading about the history of war, you're going to learn that there's plenty of honor and glory in the early days and highfalutin principles and so forth. But as the war drags on, as it inevitably does, especially civil wars, honor and glory take a backseat to ruthlessness or doing whatever is necessary to win. Grant famously considered said that the reason that he won battles wasn't so much because of strategy as because he knew he had more soldiers than Lee, and that it was a question of attrition. So it was, as he put it, arithmetic. And of course, that was the American Civil War. Civil wars are the bloodiest conflicts wherever they occur. The United States is a perfect example, but so is Syria, so is Tunisia, the French Revolution, and so on. Civil war in the United States produced over 1 million casualties when the United States was only 31 million people. We wouldn't have that many casualties in a conflict until World War II, when the country was 131 million, and everybody talked about the Gold Star mothers and the gold stars in the windows and everything else. So 1 million deaths is also representative of a large number of casualties. The American Civil War between 1860 and 1865 consumed cities and towns as well. Richmond and Atlanta were burned to the ground, but there were lots of other places destroyed by the conflict. It took the South over 100 years to recover, even though that war was fought for quote-unquote good reasons, states' rights and slavery against equality and freedom. But the United States was never the same after the Civil War. Executive powers making the president essentially a dictator were never rescinded. Amendments were passed which prevent states from seceding. There was first a hard Reconstruction and then an easy Reconstruction, which caused all kinds of problems going forward in the United States from the 1900s all the way up until present time. And when you add up the millions of deaths and the destruction of property and a fundamental change in the makeup of the republic, basically, historians will say that before the Civil War, it was these United States. After the Civil War, it was the United States. And this was war, by comparison to today's standards, at a relatively low level of intensity, because you had to ride horses and walk. You didn't have aircraft and so forth and so on. I mean, they had balloons, but you know what I'm saying. So the Civil War in the United States affected social policy and attitudes and society and budgets and government from 1865 on up to the present day. And it was all because Congress could not figure out how to abolish slavery without secessions, and presidents couldn't figure out how to lead the country forward. So we ended up having, quote-unquote, a civil war. And we don't ever want to have a civil war again. And yet we have people like Alex Jones and others suddenly talking as though we are actually having a civil war and implying that this is some kind of solution to our political problems, whatever they are, because, of course, right-wing people are all about guns, and they have guns, and they know how to use guns, and the left-wing people are all butterflies and stupid, and this is folly. It's just plain-out folly, and it's warmongering, and it is extremely dangerous, very dangerous. And I think the reason that these guys are saying this is it's an effort to maintain their relevance, whether it's Francis Wilkerson for Bloomberg or Jeff Wheeler in the Minneapolis Star Tribune or Alex Jones. Quotes like, we're in the beginning of a civil war, we're in a soft civil war, we're already in a civil war, all because some people in the last few weeks got upset because of the Trump policy concerning immigration and children and so forth. And, you know, you're welcome to your opinions on that one. As I have discussed, a few years ago, it was the Bundy Ranch or the right wing's demonization of Barack Obama, which, by the way, they're still doing on YouTube, you know, or even Bill Clinton and Janet Reno and Waco and Timothy McVeigh, or just recently the alt-right, which everyone seems to have forgotten about, the alt-right Nazis running over a person in Charlottesville just recently in present history, so a year ago. We were going to have a civil war originally because of right-wing crazy people. Now we're going to have a civil war because of the crazy left-wing people. And one of the craziest memes I've seen is we have to be intolerant of intolerance, which is so silly, because the First Amendment says simply that Congress shall make no law that contravenes the idea of the right to free speech. And it doesn't say that you can't tolerate intolerance. It doesn't say where you can speak, how you can speak, what you can say, or how you have to say it. It doesn't say it has to be said in the King's English or anything else. It just says we have free speech in this country, and the government can't tell us we can't speak, period. And yet we have an entire movement, right and left, going around telling people they can't say this and they can't say that. Francis Wilkerson and Jeff Wheeler both assert that Democrat rage will become a major problem in this country if the Democrats lose the midterms. I will talk about the midterms shortly. You have Maxine Waters exhorting her supporters to violence, which is nothing new for Maxine Waters. Here's just a quick cut of Maxine Waters doing her thing.
Children from their parents. How dare you pull children out of the arms of their mothers? How dare you lie and say you couldn't do anything about it? You're the one who caused it, and you're the one that we're gonna make to turn it back, because what you're doing now is lying, lying, lying. It is time for us to say, even though there are those who don't want us to say it, Mr. President, you need to be impeached. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much for coming out here, because history is not going to be kind to this administration. But we want history to record that we stood up, that we pushed back, that we fought, that we did not consider ourselves victims of this president. History will record that while he tried to step on all of us, we kicked him in his rear and we stepped on him. If you think we're rallying now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Already, you have members of your cabinet that are being booed out of restaurants. Who have protesters taking up at their house. Who's saying no peace, no sleep. No peace, no sleep. And guess what? We're gonna win this battle, because while you try and quote the Bible, Jeff Sessions and others, you really don't know the Bible. God is on our side. On the side of the children, on the side of what's right, on the side of what's honorable, on the side of understanding that if we can't protect the children, we can't protect anybody. And so let's stay the course. Let's make sure we show up wherever we have to show up. And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome.
And by the way, if she persists and this becomes a problem, she will be censured. And she'll go on to the long list of U.S. congressmen who have been censured, up to and including Edmund Randolph, the cousin of Thomas Jefferson, who was an opium addict and used to, orate, and was one of the considered great orators of his time, and ended up high as a kite riding his horse into the rotunda. And so they got rid of him because he was obviously high on opium. So she would not be the first to be censured, and certainly won't be the last. So there is lots of discontent, violent political speech, angry words, and angry people demanding that things get done. And everybody wants to know why. Why all these problems all of a sudden are causing all these problems and so forth. I personally believe that this is basically because the government is too far-reaching, too large to manage, and doesn't do a good job at solving problems, whether it's executive branch, whether it's Congress, whether it's ICE, whether it's the Homeland Security, whatever it is, I don't think the government does a very good job. And so the government, by nature of its far-flung size, is really in the process of being disrupted. And I believe this is going to get worse or better in the coming years as people in this country do workarounds to solve their own problems because they don't want the government to solve this. I've been saying this for at least 10 years, that we would see a day develop when people would start to lose total faith in all of the institutions, whether they are religious or government. And now what we're seeing is a lot of this stuff being disrupted on a daily basis by new technology, most significantly communications technology. If you look at it from a higher perspective, there is no main channel for communications anymore that has the credibility to be the standard for news or truth, so to speak. In other words, a schedule of facts concerning an event. This is a world where the flat earth theory or chemtrails or the rapture have just as much credibility as anything that you see on the major networks, where something that someone says on an internet channel is, whether it's the Young Turks or Alex Jones or anybody, myself, he has as much credibility as anything else anybody says. And most people, in order to be successful in this, new, complex, Wild West medium, just say what they say with bolder and bolder words in an effort to remain relevant and to get people to click and to download and to watch and listen and so forth. So the effect of all this is it drives people deeper into their positions because they're more and more confused. You can't hold two mutually opposite ideas in your brain at the same time. So if you spend a lot of time on YouTube or if you spend a lot of time, watching television or Fox News or CNN or whatever, you are driven deeper into your position. And this is one of the things that makes it almost impossible to have a conversation and why writers say, well, we're in the middle of a civil war, because people are finding it more and more difficult to work together. None of it is based on any intellectual building blocks. People have forgotten whatever they learned in college, if they learned anything in college. We don't study how democracy works. We don't study Republican government. We don't get involved enough. We just want what we want, and that's the deal. And that's a bad recipe for citizenship in this country. And I don't know the solution to that, but that's the current situation. It doesn't matter what part of what I refer to as the fake political spectrum you hail from. Everybody wants somebody, whether it's the government or a mob or something, to make things the way they want things to be. And if you want to call that civil war, fine. I'm doing this podcast because I'm trying to warn you of what civil war actually is and how we are nowhere near that. And if we get there, you don't want to be here if that's what happens. Whether it's the right's fault or the left's fault, I don't think it's anyone's fault. I just think it's technology. And the best way to explain that, and it's unfortunately quite a sidebar, but so digital audio in the music world is viewed as being very harsh. That's because it doesn't have any noise in it. It's super clean and it's very harsh. And recording engineers and musicians hear artifacts and see things visually on meters in digital media that they don't see with records and tape. And so you have a lot of musicians which are now going back and starting to record on tape. People are starting to buy vinyl again because it has a texture or patina that is warmer. And this is the reason that they're putting audio amplifiers out with tubes in them, because tubes warm things up. And in my world, everybody wants a mic processor with a tube in it. Everybody wants condenser mics with tubes in them because they sound warmer. Well, it's that way as well in terms of just media delivery systems. We're dealing with a digital world which takes all the noise out, and it's super clean and very fast, and it's harsh. And so our words are harsh. If you say something that's intense or harsh, it is delivered with harshness and intensity because it is not written, it is not repeated by somebody with a gentler voice, and it is amplified generally in a very harsh way. So that's one of the reasons that what we have here is we have media outlets, social media, and cable, and everything else that because of all this digitization, the media is intent on getting more ratings by political porn by remaining relevant in some way, shape, or form. We are awash in this content. And what it has the effect of doing is driving people deeper into their positions because you can't listen to public radio and the right-wing guy and try to reconcile what the two are saying and think that there's a middle ground. There isn't an antidote. There is an antidote for that, but it's not electronic media or digital media. And I'm not just talking about cable news networks, but I'm also talking about these upstart websites, which are quote-unquote magazines, which are funded by the Koch brothers or Tom Steyer or George Soros or political, rich guys who are politically involved, as well as YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, of course, is the worst because Twitter's entire concern is who's going to be the GOAT, whose life is going to be destroyed, who is going to be accosted at a rally or a restaurant, who can we shoot, who can we call fat and ugly and stupid, who can fall from grace faster, who will start the day as someone important with some dignity and end the day as a whore or rapist or murderer or thief. And people are laughing at this stuff. They are enjoying this stuff. They consider this entertainment and take pleasure in the misfortune of others. Well, you hear that plane out there. You know what it's time for. It's time for the big show, the air show at Oshkosh with EAA. And pilots, Alpha Systems will be there. If you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Best way to explain it is it lets you know visually how much lift your wing is producing, and that saves lives. I have heard people say this ought to be standard equipment in aircraft cockpits. If you want more information, click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com. Visit Mark Corin and Alpha Systems at the air show. If you're flying over there, you'll be very impressed with Alpha Systems. And keep listening for more info about Alpha Systems at thebobdavispodcast.com. And then you get all these titles. Trump's a fascist. Obama's a communist. Muslims are taking over the country. The right wing is packing the court because a president has an opportunity to nominate a Supreme Court justice, and all the people on the left forget that Obama appointed Kimberly Kagan, and Bill Clinton nominated Ruth Ginsburg, and Bush nominated Kennedy, and Trump, gets an opportunity to put another conservative on the court, and it's the end of the world, and this is fascism. No, it's the system working, and we don't have to fix the Supreme Court. You don't have to like all of their rulings. The right wing had to deal with the rulings on abortion and other stuff, and now the left has to deal with rulings that they don't agree with, and the idea that the justices end up being biased because the longer they sit there, the less part of the political norm they are and the more they are interested in a particular interpretation of the law. So it's working the way it's supposed to work. If you don't like it, then win Congress. Who was it that said, the Democrats were fond of saying not too long ago, well, elections, have consequences. Yes, they do. And, you just are going to have to take it and go back to work. When Reagan lost the nomination in 1976, I love this story about Reagan that, all of his supporters were very upset. And, you could say that it was going to be a political civil war in the Republican Party. And Reagan said, no. And the very next day he went back to work and, of course, became president 4 years later. So that's how you handle it. You don't throw a tantrum and then you don't have people analyze the tantrum and say this is the beginning of the Civil War and these people need to get their way or we're going to have all kinds of problems. These are fake experts just voicing an opinion in a way that allows them to be relevant so people will read what they're saying. If you don't get your way, threatening violence is not going to get you your way. You're just going to sideline yourself and your movement. The only way to get your way is to be part of the political process. And this has been going on in this country for years. Some years, remember Kent State, remember the things that happened in this country in the 90s, the how people were upset and so forth. So I don't know that we're any closer or less closer. It's just for some reason that this is the kind of stuff that comes to the surface in the media today, because this is what keeps people clicking on your website. I'll just make a prediction for Democrats, you know, in terms of the midterms. And actually, I shouldn't say prediction because I don't like making predictions, but I would suggest that most of the country politically is pretty moderate. This goes for the Republican areas as well as the Democrat areas. And unless you're from a district that is really solid, like the 5th District in Minnesota, which is solidly Democrat, or one of those districts in New York City, which is solidly Democrat, or California, which is solidly Democrat, you know, you're dealing with congressmen who are pretty moderate because there's Republicans in their districts. And the country is not red or blue, which is why I hate these stupid sayings like turn Minnesota red, which is just that's the slogan for the Republicans in the state. The state is not red. And if you listen to my History of Politics in Minnesota podcast, you'll hear there's all sorts of cross currents of populism and socialism and religious conservatism running through this state's history for 100 years. So this idea that it's all one thing or not is ridiculous. And most of the politicians that get elected are, in fact, pretty moderate. You know, people who do not agree with you should be jailed. No. People who do not agree with you should be killed. No. People who do not agree with you should be destroyed or attacked in some restaurant, or we should send people to their house with pitchforks and shovels and demand that they be thrown out of office. I'm moving around a little too much, banging on things, and so forth. If you go out and you do that, you're going to lose the midterms. And there are plenty of examples on the right, and there will be and are plenty of examples on the left. And of course, the assertion is that if the Democrats don't win the midterms, they'll have a fit and start rioting. And I'm going to talk about that in a second, because despite all the screaming and yelling and forcing to one side or another, again, moderate politicians for the most part are still winning elections in most of this country. And what are the arguments about? Well, they're not about libertarian principles. They're not about economic principles like free markets and making a concerted effort to deal with a national debt that is now over 100% of the national GDP, or dealing with the rise of China, or the possibility that Russia is intervening in U.S. elections and manipulating the American people. Oh, no. A 28-year-old Bernie Sanders supporter wins a Democratic primary in a Democratic district in Queens, where a very small percentage of the people voted. And suddenly this is a harbinger of what's going to happen in the United States. Or a Trump supporter wins a primary or loses a primary somewhere, and it means fill in the blank. Well, we don't know what it means, and we won't know what it means until people actually vote in the real deal on November 7th. This is why I haven't done any more summaries about the governors or the Congress or the Senate, because, you know, all these states have primaries running all the way up until August, and we don't know what the outcome's going to be, anyway. Are we living in a delusion? Yes, I do think we're living in a delusion. And it's a time that it is a delusion because we're being manipulated, whether it's on purpose or not, where we're being forced to hold mutually opposing ideas. Capitalism versus socialism. 24 hours a day. And every new fact or facet of this stuff only drives people deeper into their positions and more emotionally into their positions. And so this just increases the disruption and intensity that we see in all of our communications. And it literally threatens people's mental health. And yet we can't seem to turn it off. So I wonder whether anyone has taken the time to hazard a guess as to what would happen if a heavily armed American populace decided to go against itself in a quote-unquote war. I mean, that's where we started this podcast, this discussion of a condition of war, a condition of civil war, in which the citizens of a country are at war with each other. It will make school shootings and all the things we're supposedly we think are awful, whether it's crying children on the border or anything else, or whether actually it's 100 killings in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend, it will make that look like nothing. And I'm going to say, you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to encourage people to think that way, and you do not want that as a factor, because any kind of civil war or general violence, whether a Republican or Democrat is president, will be put down with extreme prejudice, meaning maximum violence. And your store-bought AR-15 is going to be useless against jets and Marines and tanks and gunships and helicopters and so forth, and chemicals, like in Syria. So everybody needs to take a step back and think about exactly what they are saying and what they are thinking when they say something stupid like we're in a civil war, to the extent that then they sit down and write it in an article and have people read it and nod their heads. Another U.S. civil war would mean an end to civilization as we know it. And I'm not exaggerating. It'll be an end to Europe. It'll be an end to, so-called Western Asia, for lack of a better term. And it will mean vast unrest across the globe, and no country, not even China, will be immune from the general violence that will break loose if we cease leading the world in civic discourse. And we need to think about this as citizen and world leaders in this country instead of bequeathing to our children a world that used to be okay but is now a mess because we were too stupid to turn off Twitter. And I don't know whether you want to say we need to back up or need to learn to work together or anything else, but my experience is that neither side really has the arguments. They're just emotionally braying at each other. And, I mean, I know the right the best. I'm not a socialist. I don't believe in socialism. I don't think it works. I think it predicates the conditions for real fascism and totalitarianism because it concentrates too much power in the government. I personally think that the United States has been socialist since World War II at the latest, and that the democratic socialist today is nothing more than actually a conservative because they're trying to preserve and extend the status quo, and the Republican Party is just the lighter version of that same kind of conservatism. They both want to make the government stronger. What we need to do is make the government itself weaker and give people, you know, their power back, because the reason that we're having all this, you know, rancor is because the government is failing. You know, it's not educating kids very well. It's not solving the border crisis. It's not, dealing with the debt crisis. It's not passing laws that help business. You know, they take more and more of our money and so on and so on and so on. So you're dealing with a government that really is already overbearing, and the only way to cut it back is through the political process and to convince people on both sides. If you don't like the NSA and you want legal marijuana, then you should join the libertarians, because we don't want taxation and we don't want overbearing federal governments or state governments. So somewhere there's got to be some middle ground there with people to understand that capitalism and freedom do go together. Now, that's my personal opinion. My friend Jill, the super socialist, you know, would be appalled by that and wants to look at Trump as a lightning rod. I look at Trump as a transitory figure and will probably be forgotten in 50 years or 100 years. People will say, who is that dude with the red hair that was president? He's not going to be remembered like Lincoln or, you know, I think most of our presidents in the current time frame, with the exception of Reagan, will probably be forgotten. You know, 150 years from now, they'll teach Roosevelt and Reagan and whoever comes after Trump and whoever comes after him, as opposed to, because that's the person that's going to have to reform things. And so reform involves involvement. It means turning off the screaming and the yelling. It means learning the arguments. It means working tirelessly to solve problems in your community that have become very, very complex. You know, as a side, and I'm not going to say his name, but I'm kind of dedicating this podcast to a good friend of mine that died literally of a broken heart just recently, because he was very, very concerned about his business and very frightened of his future and very, very depressed and had a massive heart attack. and essentially willed himself to die. And I have seen people lost. We have seen people lost because they are struggling, and nobody knows how they are struggling, whether they're falling down from upper class to middle class, or from middle class to being homeless, or from upper class to being homeless, or they feel like failures, or whatever the problem is. We're not solving their problems. We're not helping those people solve their problems. We're making those problems worse. And if you think a $20 trillion debt and a $4 trillion budget every year is going to make anyone's life better, you're not going to, you won't even get, you know, Anthony Bourdain never got to the point where he needed health care because he was too depressed. he died. My friend didn't need health care. I mean, he died on the operating table. So this is a situation we have in this country, and everybody running around and saying it has to be my solution. Well, that's part of the problem. You know, how do we have economic growth that lifts all people no matter what their walk of life? How do we have freedom for everybody no matter what they want to do, as long as they're not going to violate some kind of criminal law, as in hurting other people? How do we use new technology to revolutionize medicine, education, transportation, communication? This is all coming. This new world is coming. AI and robotics and universal basic incomes and all these things are going to be the issues that we're going to be talking about. And we are still having the same arguments that Marx and Engels and von Mises had, you know, over the centuries, you know, more than a century ago. We're still having the same silly arguments that we've been having for 40 or 50 years because people cannot move on. There's a company that's capitalizing, meaning that they're going to, you know, be on the stock exchange, that makes a drone-like helicopter that's made out of very, very light composites that you can fly. You don't need a pilot's license. You fly it just like a drone. It takes an hour and a half of instruction, and you can fly. So it's literally a flying car. Things like this are coming. I saw an article today that said that some grocery company is going to experiment with autonomous car delivery of groceries. So this stuff is happening, and if it works, it's going to end up being autonomous delivery of pizzas and all sorts of other things. Meanwhile, we're, you know, obsessed with some guy who's president that nobody's going to friggin' remember. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And then what do writers do? Instead of talking about the possibilities and the hope of the future, all they can do is return to the Civil War. You don't want a civil war. 56,000 casualties at Gettysburg in just about 2 days of conflict because they couldn't disengage, because both sides were struggling to have a main victory. People who spoke the same language, had the same history, had friends on either side of the Mason-Dixon line, killing each other because of what? Because the South didn't want to abolish slavery, or because the South wanted to secede from the Union, or whatever the stupid reason was that we had this. And at the beginning, you know, people, you know, talk about the Battle of First Manassas. People took their wagons out because they thought it was going to be a showplace battle and were horrified when cannons started blowing up and killing them and their children in the middle of this gigantic battle of First Manassas. This is how stupid people are. And if you think we're any different today, you're crazy. People have no idea what these weapons do, and they have no idea what a state of war is. War has not touched this country since the 1860s in terms of on our soil, and these idiots are running around talking about civil war. It's one of the reasons I don't want to talk about politics unless I can advance the story, but I do think this is an advancement because we're being led down a very dark path. What's the antidote? Very quickly, because I only have a couple of minutes. I think the antidote is written word and spoken word and reading. And I think it's formats like this, which are more stream of consciousness, as opposed to trying to get something out in 6 minutes and breaking to play seven commercials of people screaming at you to sell you diapers or some kind of drug. That's the problem with this country, is people cannot turn the media off. That's why I have championed the news cleanse, and every day it gets worse. For, you know, what are you watching and why? Why would you even bother? So I don't want to go on because it's the holidays, but it is important to remember this 4th of July. And on the 4th of July, usually we talk about the Revolutionary War itself, a very bloody conflict in this country. But the Civil War was really a disaster for the United States, and we changed significantly. We are a significantly different country. If we could have solved those problems without going to war, this country would be much further along than it is. But those things happen, and when they do, they irreparably change. Given the intensity of modern warfare, civil or otherwise, a civil war in the United States for any reason, and don't call political outrage civil war, but a civil armed conflict in this country for any reason would be a disaster, not just for the United States, but for the whole world. And I don't think we'd ever recover. I think it would be, we would have regional governments that would be failures for a long time. So if that's the kind of world that you want to bequeath to your children, go right ahead and keep steeping yourself in that kind of rhetoric and writing articles about and doing shows about civil war. Remember, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for air conditioning emergencies, especially this holiday season, or toilets, or backed up sewers, or whatever your problem is. Think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488 online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 735, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Happy 4th of July.